Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Welcome back, Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Marquise Munson. I have no idea where Nick is.
I think Nick went to his office.
His Twitter office.
Yeah, he went to his Twitter office.
Adam Bingen from The Athletic will join us here in just a few minutes. The college football playoff rankings come out last night. Ohio State at number one, LSU at number two. We'll get to some Tannehill stuff here in just a second. And then, of course, we've got Alabama at three.
Alabama.
Penn State at four. A little surprising there. Over Clemson at number five. Nobody happier about that than Dabo Sweeney. So the college football rankings out there. The Pac-12 teams ahead of Oklahoma. Georgia at six ahead of Oklahoma. So the Big 12 may be in some trouble after last night. So the college football rankings out last night. A little college basketball. And a Ryan Tannehill stat that will shock you in just a second. So, D-Mace, your thoughts on the rankings last night, what you saw. How concerned are you? If you're Alabama, do you have to beat LSU to now make it in, or do you think number three is still good enough?
No, I think number three is good enough. I don't think the loser between Alabama and LSU is ultimately the loser. Honestly, I think they might end up being the winner if they did indeed run the table, because whoever loses this game will not be in the SEC championship, assuming they win out. Alabama has Auburn at the end of the season. That's going to be a tough out for Alabama. But if they win out, both teams, after a loss here, whichever one has that loss, if the team that loses win out, I think they're sitting in the driver's seat. I think because they don't have to play in the SEC championship game, they're in a position that Alabama was in some years ago where, okay, we lose to Auburn. I think they lost to Auburn that year. And then don't play in the SEC championship game, but ultimately make it into the playoffs. And it was the right thing to do because Alabama that year, I think they won the national championship that year. So the winner, the loser of this game is technically, I don't think, will be a loser. I think ultimately if they win out, they will be the winner in all of this.
So you guys want a good Ryan Tannehill stat?
Oh, Let's do it. I crave it deep in my loins.
Yes. So this will show you, and this is kind of shocking, but should show you that stats can be overblown at times. I saw this yesterday. Ryan Tannehill currently leads the NFL in completion percentage at 71.8. He's got a career best passer rating of 99.7. When I saw these two stats from Joe Caparoso of, I don't even know where he's from, but he's verified. He's got a blue check mark.
Must be true, though.
He's tweeting out all these like NFL quarterback stats. Yeah, I could not believe that considering just how incompetent the offensive line is and how ill-prepared the offensive coordinator is. Like, is this one of these things where and I know we said, you know, all right, we're seeing what Tannehill really is the last week or so, and he's regressed a little bit from that first appearance. But is this one of these things where we might need to take a step back and say, you know what, he's been about as good as he possibly can be considering his surroundings?
I don't think he's regressed. I think the play calling has. I think when you go against a team that is arguably the worst pass defense in the National Football League and you don't throw the football, that has nothing to do with Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go against a team that is the worst run stopping defense and you don't run the football, which in turn would help the passing. That's not Ryan's fault. I think Tannehill has played well, considering, you know, what this team is about on the offensive side of the ball. Offensive line is bad. Offensive coordinator, he's still learning on the fly, and you implement a an offensive game plan, you know, basically going against what you should be implementing. You're going against a horrible pass defense team, but you want to run a football. And they have the number, you know, top 10 ranked run-stopping defense. And then the next following week, a team that has one of the best pass, you choose not to run the football.
Couple of different points here. I mean, Marcus Mariota had his highest career percentage completion percentage last year, and everybody hated him. So I don't know how – it's an important stat. Don't get me wrong. Tannehill was 13-16 against Denver, so that was complete garbage time. Against the prevent defense. So that's 81% there. He was 79% against the Chargers, who, by the way, are the worst completion percentage defense, pass defense in the NFL. So he was 79% there, 23 of 29. And then he was 27 of 39 last week against Carolina, 69% completion percentage, almost all of that coming in the second half, in down by two touchdowns as well. So I think you have to put – it's good that he's been better. It's good that he's playing better than his average, and it's good that he's been better than Marcus. You still have to put some context around it and say, when and where and how are you putting up these numbers? Marcus threw for 300 yards against Jacksonville. Nobody cares because it was garbage time. And you have to point that out. You have to say, it doesn't matter that you threw for 180 yards in the second half because you were down 17-0. Like, that's what matters, is you were down 17-0. So if we're going to do it for one guy, we got to do it for the other guy. It doesn't mean he's not been better. He's been significantly better. My issue with Tannehill that I think is going to start to creep up, and this is the turnover issue. He had two interceptions called back on penalties 2 weeks ago. He had two interceptions last week. He threw an interception against the Chargers and the Broncos. He's fumbled three times and recovered them. So my concern is the turnovers as the defenses get tougher, because we know the strength of schedule is much tougher for the Titans in the second half. So as Floyd said yesterday, he was one of the few non-issues on the offense this past weekend against Carolina. It was all the other pieces of the puzzle that were sort of the issue. But the defense was also an issue this weekend. Mm-hmm. So Tannehill's been good. It's been better. There's no question he's mentally in a far better place than Mariota is, and is throwing the football better. But is it sustainable? Who knows?
I think it will be. I think because sort of like we believe Marcus, you just need to be at another place. And maybe, you know, him as a quarterback changes because he's in a new environment. You probably will see more so of the quarterback you thought he would be if he goes somewhere else. I think the same thing here with Ryan Tannehill.
Fresh start.
Yeah, fresh start here. I think he will be a much better quarterback than he was at Miami. The turnovers, I'm not too worried about the turnovers, because I'm not going to, you know, the one off of, you know, A.J. Brown's hands. That's not his fault. It was a good pass to him. That's a pass that he's caught before. I don't know why he didn't catch it that time. The pass, you know, the interception when he first got in there, he's trying to make a play there down. It was fourth down. So either I'm going to throw it or I'm going to get sacked. I would rather throw it and put them at the 2 yard line or the 3 yard line and not get sacked. So I'm not going to, that one I really don't care about. The one, you know, from the pass, the other one from the pass game, I would love to know, because he went on the sideline and he was talking with Humphreys, and he was like, well, he expected the guy to come in versus cover two. You got to cross the safety's face. He threw it in there. That's the same thing with Winston the week prior when he was playing against the Titans. He expected the guy to cross the guy's face, and he's throwing in there, and you're trusting that you're going to do what you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it. And it didn't happen, but it's on Ryan. And with a new guy, a receiver in Khalif, He can't expect Khalif to know maybe what Humphreys would have known. Maybe don't even throw the pass. Maybe look outside and throw it to a guy outside.
You know what's really funny about the A.J. Brown off his hands? You know what play it reminded me of?
What?
Was the fourth and two throw from Mar? Was it against the Colts? The fourth and two play, remember?
On the
40-yard line.
He dropped.
Read the safety on the right side, threw it to A.J. Brown on a quick slant, was wide open, hit him right in the hands, and it bounced off.
Dropped, yeah.
Like, I'm sitting there going, well, we hammered Arthur Smith for the play call. We hammered Mariota for the throw. We hammered A.J. Brown for dropping it. And
I didn't hammer. Oh, yeah.
Like, I just mean as a giant collective, we sort of said, what are you doing calling the slant play on fourth and two with a rookie? You know, we kind of questioned the play call. Then we blamed Marcus for throwing it a little too high and too hot. And A.J. Brown sort of gets a pass in that situation. Well, now Tannehill's in there, and it's all A.J. Brown's fault. So I think there's, like, you can look at those plays and – Again, I thought we overreacted to that play call and that interception or that dropped pass from A.J. Brown with Marcus, and we can overreact with this as an interception because it's not Tannehill's fault. It's clearly not his fault. He went off. He hit A.J. Brown right in the hand. So you got to make that play. And I just am concerned that he's got four interceptions. Two of them have been called back, so he's thrown six technically, and he's fumbled three times. That I'm just pointing out that's something that you should, even though he's been better, very clearly been better, that is something they need to be careful of. And he's got to get rid of that part of the game, whether it's A.J. Brown's fault or not. That part of this needs to, otherwise this team's already facing an uphill battle. They're not, like, every game they're basically scrapping and clawing to get to 20 points to try to win, whether it's Tannehill or Marcus, and so you can't have mistakes.
Right now, your chance to win a four-pack of tickets to Blue Raiders football as MTSU hosts Rice at Floyd Stadium on Saturday, November the 16th. Just be caller number 615-737-1025. It's emotional.
It is.
You know, Floyd Stadium and Rice, it brings back memories.
I got something I know you're going to like here, Nick. That's emotional. You might get emotional.
But not Whitney Houston.
No, baby. I found the limits on my Xfinity X1 voice remote last night, Nick. I asked for Maction. I pushed the button on my remote, and I said, Maction. And it didn't know what I was talking about, so I found the limit on what the Xfinity X1 voice remote can do. But you know what it gave me? It pulled up all these action movies. And so I ended up watching Hot Tub Time Machine last night, which I have not seen yet. It is exceptionally good. So even when Xfinity, again, it doesn't know Maction because Maction is just sort of like an internet term. It knows everything else. And even when I say something it doesn't know, it still brings me up good options to watch last night. So I've got the playoff rankings and the basketball on one TV, and I've got Hot Tub Time Machine with Rob Corddry acting like a complete knucklehead who is absolutely brilliant in that movie on my other screen, having a great time because Xfinity X1 voice remote takes care of you. Even when it doesn't know what you're asking for, it still delivers something quality. That's what Xfinity does for you. Makes your life simple, easy, and awesome. 1-800-XFINITY is the phone number. Xfinity.com is the website. Or pop into a store today for more details.
Developments on the tattoo front, folks.
Whoa.
So, we mentioned on this show yesterday that Willie and Mace and all the guys on Fox Sports Tennessee brought up the tattoo thing with Dan Lambert and my self-professed love for the power play success. Now, we actually have the audio, but I've also come across a tweet that brings up an interesting question for discussion. But let's first, this was the audio courtesy of the good folks at Fox Sports Tennessee on the pregame show a few nights ago.
I feel like those numbers are encouraging enough that more goals are coming in the future. Now, it's pretty interesting. Our flagship radio station, 102.5 The Game, the morning show host Nick Cale said he's in love with how the Predators are going about this power play, so much so that if the Predators move up into the top five in the league in power play goal percentage, he'll get a tattoo on his back of assistant coach Dan Lambert. So there's incentive for the guys.
That is amazing.
Yeah, that's
incentive.
My boy.
I
Nick
love
Cale,
that.
Atta boy.
There you go.
All right.
Well, it's determined that it's the back now.
First of all, he's already put the stamp on your back there, buddy. He's already done that, which that was not decided. I think Nick Cale gets to decide where to put it on his body.
Correct.
I think it should also be dependent on how high they finish in the power play rankings. And one thing Willie did not say there, he got a little incorrect. We're Willie. It's not if they work their way into the top five. They have to finish at the end of the season in the top five in the power play. Now, they are working their way towards that. I do believe that we should have a chart
build a chart.
What the hell's wrong with me?
I build a bear.
Yeah, and
build
have like no. If they finish number one, it's like forehead. If they finish number two, it's like neck tattoo. They finish number three, it's like the thigh, the quad. If they finish number four, then okay, you can go shoulder blade. And if it's number five, you know, lower back, whatever. Like pick, it gets worse as they get better.
The first one though, it has to be in a place where when you're in a professional setting, it can be concealed.
I'm okay with that.
That's number one. So like the head is out, unless you want me to show up to work wearing a bag over my head. Preferably plastic.
Can we have like a some type of power play meter in here?
We should auction off parts of your body.
It goes up.
Yeah.
And then goes, like, if they go from 15 to 14, we just monitor the whole thing.
You could bring in the wheel
uh-huh.
for the rant wheel, and we'll spin it, and we'll use that as a little sounder to see if it's going up or down.
You know how you do the – you know how you some people bring in, like, the when charity events or companies are raising money for something, and you put a it looks like a cylinder tube, and it's like, hey, we need to get to 50,000 or whatever. You know, you put a number at the top, and you have to, and then you slowly see it build and grow.
We need to get that. Yeah.
We need to get one of those where it's just like
a power play meter.
It's a chart that has 1 through 31 on it, and every day we come in and move the little Predator logo to a different spot on the chart. And it's like, oh, they're number 11. Oh, they're number 7. Oh, they're number 5. Oh, tattoo.
We can watch Nick sweat. As they start to get
I mean, I'm sweating right now.
So you don't have a tattoo, correct?
No, I do.
You do. So you understand what you can do then.
He has one on his lower back.
No, I do not. right on.
He's got one around his belly button.
Is there anybody on the show that does not have a tattoo?
Yeah, I think we're all tatted up.
Yeah.
Everybody's got ink.
You make it seem like we all went to prison.
I got two sleeves, man. I got a sleeve.
What's your scribes, dog?
Oh, we all tatted up, man.
I have three.
How many do you have? Three. I have one.
How many do you have, Mace?
Two.
Two?
I don't think Marquise, I've ever... Where are your tattoos at, Braden? Oh, I don't think I've ever seen them.
So, 4, 7...
Why are you looking at him like that?
I'm just wondering where the tattoos are.
I keep them in a place that are concealed. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Braden's got one right above his belly button. All aboard!
Yards per play.
Yeah, it's actually...
He has it on his ankle.
It actually says yards per attempt. Across my lower back.
He has it on his ankle.
I've got a chest plate of Marcus Mariota in a bathtub.
Oh, wow.
Right on my chest.
Calf.
Well, now here's the question. Somebody, it was Wayne. I want to get the name correct. Wayne tweeted, he said he did not hear the word permanent mentioned in the conversation.
You're not trying to skirt that issue.
I think it's automatically assumed
that the
tattoo's
permanent. Yeah, we get real tattoos. We don't get henna. Yeah, we're getting real tattoos.
We get everything is real, authentic.
Morning Drive is all
it's
tatted
authentic
up.
Around this place. We're real on this. Six to ten, we're real and authentic.
All right, how many tattoos does Chase McCabe have?
Zero.
How many tattoos does Willie Donick have?
Zero.
Zero.
How many tattoos does Darren McFarlane have?
I would say Darren has one.
I can see Darren having that one.
I think Darren has one, like a teddy bear.
That one drunken night in college in Kentucky.
You see, like, Darren have, like, an AC/DC tattoo?
It says Kentucky, but it's spelled wrong.
Instead of BBN, it's something else.
All right, so Stillman clearly has no ink. Jesus.
He wakes up one morning after a long night in college in Lexington, Kentucky. He's like, guys. It's Big Blue Nation. BBN, Big Blue Nation. What? What do you guys think I'm talking about?
You guys think Floyd has a tattoo? I say no.
I say no, too. He doesn't. But Floyd's the type that got, like, a tattoo on his thigh.
I'm just... Yeah. I just think it's like... And it's a picture. It's like his wife's face. Here's the thing. I was just curious. I think the four of us have more tattoos than all the other shows combined. I think Marquise might have more than all the other shows combined.
Man, good Lord.
Because we are all tatted up.
Well, Mace, you have more than Braden?
I just have
two. No, he's got two. I got three.
One on
each arm. Marquise has the most with four.
I thought about getting a sleeve. I think that was sort of kind of like midlife crisis.
Like instead of a sports car.
Yeah, instead of a sports car, I would get a tat. I thought about it, and I'm like, man. And I thought about it for four or five months.
Because if you have a sleeve.
Even though I'm not 50, but I still thought about it.
If you have a sleeve, though, like you instantaneously have an image of – other people have an image of you the second you walk into any location. If
Thug
you got a
life,
sleeve.
Baby.
Well, no, not that. It's just, I mean, like you're either
hardcore.
like a hipster musician or, you know, a bar. Like there's an instantaneous judgment that happens, right?
A bartender.
And I think we're moving past those types of judgments.
We should be.
But don't you have to have some sort of like physical presence? Like you can't be like a real skinny rail and have a sleeve.
That's all. Every musician is like that, though.
It doesn't look good, though.
It doesn't.
Hello,
look good.
Me here. That's no, me.
Like
you're
the
not
Rock.
Emaciated or whatever.
The Rock. When The Rock left wrestling, he got a lot of like family tribal stuff for his like Samoan background, and he's got a Samoan sleeve that goes down to the elbow,
and it's on his
through
chest,
the
too.
Shoulder, through the chest. Yeah. But it looks good because he's carved out of stone.
Well, I think the musicians though are like 5'3", 110 pound, and they look like they haven't eaten a meal in like weeks because they've been up all night you know, working on chords. I don't know. But, like, the musicians are very skinny and thin.
How many tattoos does Fitz have? Do you know?
A ton.
Yeah.
But he's got it on both sleeves. And that's, like, what he's done is he's built all of his, you know, wherever he's lived and wherever he's worked, he's put tattoos on each of his arms. And
I'm still thinking about it, though, man.
Like, I'm not nearly cool enough to ever think about doing it. I want to think that I'm that way, but I'm just not, and so I don't even try.
I'm trying to figure out when I turn, like, 75, 80.
I am getting one more.
What? I mean,
I'm getting one more for my kids.
Birth dates?
But I don't know what it's going to look like. I will say this, though, because we don't really have an older generation of, like, openly tattooed people, right? We haven't reached that point yet where, like, a sleeve on, like, a 92-year-old. Have you seen one of those?
No.
I saw a woman the other day, and she was probably mid-70s, and had tattoos on her shoulders, on her arms, on her back. Like, she was wearing, like, this was, like, in the summertime and had, like, a dress on, and so you could see all of her shoulders and, like, her calves and stuff, and had tattoos everywhere. And she was early 70s. She was in shape. It looked okay.
Tattoos.
But it's gonna be interesting when all of our generation all of a sudden is 80 years old.
Yeah,
and we're the first one where we're all tatted up. And, like, what are we all going to look like when it's all droopy?
I like, and I like, for some reason, tattoos on a woman. I like it.
I agree.
I like it. I mean, you know, if you don't have them, that's great too. But if you have them, it's like, because some people look frown upon it.
No,
you know,
I got no problem.
Some people are like, I don't want it. No, I think it looks nice. Okay, here's a question.
I want my bartenders in Nashville to have tattoos.
Exactly. Here's a question. How many?
The guys need mustaches, the women need tattoos.
Because we know, like, when we talk about sports, we know basketball, they have tats. I think they probably are the most tatted people in the world.
We're also showing the most skin.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right.
Athlete.
Do you think hockey players, what do you think the percentage of hockey players with tattoos?
A lot of tattoos. Yeah.
Do you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
man, I've always wondered that because you see them like football and basketball, not much as much as baseball, but you know
what's the difference? Let's change the subject from sports to something far more lighthearted. Race, culture, is it different? Is tattoo early tattoo like black culture? You two of you guys. What's the difference?
I don't know. Tattoos, I think it's sort of like a rite of passage, sort of. Like, when you're young, when you get a certain age, you want a tat. Like,
I mean, I made the mistake of getting mine when I was 18. Uh-huh. So,
I didn't get my tattoo until I got to college.
Yeah, mine was when I graduated high school that summer.
That
was basically mine, too.
Mine was actually 21. That was my, 21.
Nick and I were younger than both of
y'all. So it's almost like a rite of passage. Like, I can do what I want now.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, because I damn sure wasn't getting when I was living in my mom and dad's home.
Yeah, because I didn't drink or get tattoos until I was 21. So I was a rebel after that.
Kind of like me, too.
Well, I got mine on my 18th birthday.
Okay.
And I was moving out of my parents' house, like, that month.
He was like a rebel.
I was like,
take this, mom, dad.
It's like 1 inch by 2 inches. It's like this tiny little thing.
And I never, when I got my tattoo, because I got it my freshman year that summer, a bunch of us on the team went and got tattoos.
That's what we
But I never took my shirt off because it was on my arm, my left bicep. I never took my shirt off around my parents. Never. For like the longest. Because I didn't want them to see it.
Yeah.
And then once I got older, it was like, wear a tank top. It didn't matter.
I waited till my 18th birthday so my parents couldn't say no. So you can't say no.
Big Finish coming up at 9:45 this morning. Oh, Adam Vingan coming up next. Nice little stick save by D-Macer.
You almost dropped an entire smoothie of berries all over the computer.
Bad.
There you go. Back after this, Adam Vingan talking all things Preds next. Predators back in action tomorrow night, game two of their four-game road trip. Looking forward to that. And right now, talking all things Preds is our buddy Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Adam, we appreciate a couple of minutes. How you doing this morning, pal?
I'm good. How are you?
We are doing well. I don't know if anybody is doing as well as Nick Bonino right now, and that's where I want to start. Fourth on the team in points this season. The guy has 8 goals. He's been flat out a power on the offensive end of the ice. How surprising is this to you, and really, is he capable of keeping this up? Maybe not at the pace of 36 goals or whatever the math comes out to be, but can he be more than we expected this year on offense?
I am a bit surprised, and as you'll recall, during the course of the summertime, I regularly said, whether it's on your show or wrote on The Athletic, that Nick Bonino was the beneficiary of some fantastic puck luck last year. That his numbers last year, I believe he had 17 goals and 35 points, you know, were the product of inflated shooting percentage and save percentage. And this year, it's kind of the same. I will tip my cap to him. He has had a really great start to the season. I never thought we would say at any point in early November, or actually at any point during the season, that Nick Bonino would be the team's leading goal scorer with 8 goals. But he is shooting 33.3% at 5-on-5. That is going to regress. He is, again, among one of the luckiest players in the league, and that's quantified by combining a team's on-ice shooting percentage and save percentage. So the team's shooting the lights out when he's on the ice. He's getting good goaltending when he's on the ice. So his numbers, again, are slightly inflated by some of the luck that he's been getting. But he has been really strong. His line with Grimaldi and Smith has been really good since they've been together. And you can't complain, ultimately, about scoring 8 goals in 15 games in the way that he's helped this offense.
What about Pekka Rinne? He's obviously off to the best start in franchise history. Are you seeing anything different from him? Is it just a great offense? Is he more relaxed because he knows he doesn't have the pressure to pitch a shutout every night? Just explain maybe how good of a start he's had relative to a lot of other really good years.
Well, I saw yesterday after the game that, as you mentioned, he's 8-0-2 through 10 games, which is a franchise record for the longest season opening point streak by a goaltender. He also became the first goaltender in league history to post a season-opening point streak of at least 10 games at the age of 36 or older, and he just turned 37 over the weekend. I can't say I'm seeing anything specific that's different about Pekka Rinne. I just think he continues to defy logic and age by continuing to play at such a high level at such an advanced age. And goaltenders at his age really should not be playing the way he's playing. But he's been fantastic. We've seen a couple of rough games over the course of the start, even with the 8-0-2 start. I think of the game against Calgary where they blew the 4-1 lead in the third period. It wasn't a good team game overall, but that was probably his weakest game as well. But I just think he just continues to show that even at a freshly 37, he's one of the best goaltenders in the league. In terms of mechanics or his approach, I can't say I see anything different than what I've been seeing for the past several years.
Another guy, Adam, who seems to have gotten himself back on track is Kyle Turris. Do you think this, what we're seeing now, is more indicative of what he will continue to be? Because we're trying to figure out, you know, has he lost it? You know, will he ever return back to form before he got here? But now it seems like this season early on, he's picked up everything and he seems to be playing like the guy the Predators hoped they were getting when they made the trade.
Right, and that trade, by the way, was 2 years ago yesterday, if you can believe it, the 2 year anniversary of the Kyle Turris trade, which also included Matthew Duchene going from Colorado to Ottawa. Anyway, you know, Kyle has 8 points in 15 games. He scored one of the 6 goals for the Predators against the Red Wings the other night. And I think we're finally seeing him get a fair shake. There were some line changes before the game against Detroit, and Kyle Turris graduated to the quote-unquote second line as the center, with Mikhail Granlund being bumped down to the quote-unquote fourth line. Feels like Mikhail Granlund is a new Kyle Turris. But I think you're seeing a healthy and a revitalized Kyle Turris. You know, we talked during the summertime about his performance at the World Championships and whether or not we should make something out of it. I really do think that that had a significant effect on his mindset as he prepared for the season over the summer. I think if he doesn't have that experience, I think the start to a season might be a bit rougher. But he seems to be back to the Kyle Turris we know he can be. And he's riding some confidence. He's getting playing time with players that complement his skill set. I think the Predators would still ultimately prefer to find a way out of that contract just because they have a lot of tough decisions to make. And a $6 million cap hit, getting rid of a $6 million cap hit would go a long way in fixing some of those issues. But with the way that Kyle Turris is going right now, why would you want to trade him? He really has been an asset to this team, especially with some early injuries that they've dealt with in the first month of the season.
Adam, Ryan Ellis is off to a really good start this year as well. I thought Braden had a really good observation yesterday when we were discussing, you know, Ryan Ellis basically getting into that scuffle two nights ago and making the correlation back to last spring when he got pushed around in Dallas. And the crux of the conversation was, hey, I'm not going to get pushed around as a smaller, undersized defenseman in this league anymore. Did you take that as Ryan Ellis maybe trying to send a statement around the league?
I didn't, but I can see where you're coming from in that. You know, Dylan Larkin certainly took offense to it and ended up taking not only a fighting major, but a roughing penalty as well. But I had a really interesting conversation with Ryan Ellis about a week and a half ago in Tampa. And we all know, watching Ryan Ellis last year, just based on the eye test, something wasn't right about him. And he was playing through some injuries last year that he told me the fact that he was able to play in all 82 games was an accomplishment in itself. And Ryan Ellis, to me, is the most competitive player on that roster. I mean, there were opportunities last year where he was given the choice to sit out for a couple of games and rest if he wanted to, and that was a complete non-starter with Ryan Ellis. He did not want to miss any games, and he had a career year in points last year, average ice time, first time he played in all 82 games, but he still didn't seem like himself. And I feel like this year, between the points, the underlying analytics, the eye test, everything is meshing, and we're seeing Ryan Ellis almost reborn, I feel like. He's as healthy as he possibly can be. The injuries, by the way, my understanding, were not related to his knee, which he had surgery on a couple of years ago, so it was something else that he was dealing with. But he acknowledged that he was not completely himself last year. He wasn't able to do the things that he wanted to do, and that may have contributed to the play against Dallas in the playoffs that we always reference. But you know, he's been fantastic. I mean, he and Roman Josi are point-per-game players through the first 15 games of the season. I mean, they have been spectacular as a pair and individually.
Yeah, I think my point, Adam, was just I'd like to see him show that edge where he's toeing the line between clean and dirty a little bit. It's not dirty, but it's close so that other teams just have something to think about before diving into the corners in the playoffs. And that's just – I think I want to see some of that from him throughout the course of the year so that teams aren't just so confident that they just barrel into the corners in the playoffs. So that was kind of my point about that particular hit on Larkin that started all of that. My follow-up, though, to your comments about Turris and the contract, Craig Smith, Nick Bonino, Mikael Granlund, and Kyle Turris, they're all getting paid between $4 and $6 million. How many of these guys are a part of the Roman Josi contract problem that will take place next year?
I would say at least two. You know, I wrote a story on Monday breaking down how Roman's contract could impact the roster. And really, I think it's and barring a cap-clearing move like a Kyle Turris trade, for example, I think it's going to come down to Mikael Granlund or Craig Smith. And as I watch Mikael Granlund so far this season, 10 consecutive games without a point, his underlying numbers are good, but he's not producing. You know, he's 27 years old. He's making $6.5 million in salary. He's going to be looking for a big payday for a long-term contract. I don't know how you can commit that kind of term and dollar to Mikael Granlund the way he's looking right now. I mean, Craig Smith is the older player. He'll be 31 before the start of next season, but you know what you're getting in Craig Smith. Mikael Granlund, from a point perspective, has been a major disappointment since coming to Nashville. He's not worth the investment that's being made of him right now. And if he doesn't pick up his play, I can't see why the Predators would want to commit long-term and a lot of money to him. I'm really curious to see how that goes. In terms of Craig Smith, I know that his agent met with Brian Poile, assistant general manager, late last week to have some early conversations about Smith's future and a potential contract extension, but nothing past that. But it's going to be very interesting because I think at least two notable players on this roster are not going to be on it when next season starts.
Adam, good stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate the time. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thank you.
You got it. Adam Vinken with us. That was almost verbatim what I said yesterday with Granlund.
Right on what you were saying yesterday. So
just not earning that 5.75.
And a lot of it's about how old you are and what are you looking for. And I think Adam makes a great point there, too. At his age, Granlund, 27 years old, 26 years old, he's still looking for that number one biggest last paycheck, right? Like, he wants the 5 or 6 year deal worth $36 million. Like, that's he wants the Turris contract. Turris has already gotten it. Craig Smith is probably not, you know, of that value. Nick Bonino's a little older too, and he's not of that value either. So if you can bring back Craig Smith and Nick Bonino, you know, at around $4 million apiece per, you don't have to give Granlund the big contract. You can let him go. You trade Turris. That's $6 million. That's $12 million off the books right there.
No doubt about it. Big finish coming up next. Stay there. It's Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We've had a big show. Now it's time for a big finish on Morning Drive.
That is correct. It is time for the big finish. We do it each and every day at 9:45 here on Morning Drive. And Braden, it's brought to you by
Nashville SC, inaugural season tickets for the MLS season next year, of course, coming up. NashvilleSC.com is the website, NashvilleSC.com.
Welcome into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, The Game, here on a Wednesday edition of the show. Happy hump day.
We should take all of our pre-show conversations and commercial breaks.
Put them on a podcast.
Put them on a podcast and then put them behind a paywall and then put a rating on it. Explicit.
Man, it would be it would be so awesome. Calipari is the greatest coach ever.
Oh, you got it in there early.
It'd be awesome.
Jesus. Wow.
I know.
So your thoughts, your first reaction, Ohio State 1, LSU 2, Bama 3, Penn State 4, and then the guys on the outside looking in was what?
Clemson 5, Georgia 6, you know, first reaction. Number one for me is if I'm Dabo Swinney, I am the happiest dude on the planet. Mm-hmm. I am the happiest dude on the planet. If I'm Dabo Swinney, I could not be happier. I think Reese Davis said it last night. Could not, the most excited guy to see Clemson pop up at 5 is Dabo Swinney. Because he's going to take that and he's going to plaster it all over the facility and say, look at this, boys. 25, 26 straight. You're winning by 35 points a game. You got the best player in America. Nobody trusts you. Nobody believes in you.
They don't believe Penn State's going to be Ohio State. They believe Penn State is going to lose and be out anyway. Why? Because my thing is, you put Clemson at 5. Clemson has blown everybody out except North Carolina.
Clemson will be undefeated, yeah, and they're going to be in the playoff regardless.
Exactly. And then Penn State has had some close games, period. They've had close games.
But better wins.
Yeah, but better wins.
Slightly.
But you put them ahead of Clemson. My thought is they know, they don't believe that Penn State can beat Ohio State. So they know eventually, once the rankings come back again after the game, after Penn State and Ohio State play, Clemson will jump them, and Penn State will drop to 8.
Well, and they'll feel justified this week if they beat Minnesota.
I ticked off Penn State fans last night on Twitter. I said that Clemson would beat Penn State by 17 points on the neutral court.
Yes, I think so.
You know who I feel bad for? Is NC State.
Oh, yeah.
This week, NC State is at home against Clemson. NC State's a 32.5-point underdog at home to Clemson. Clemson's going to come in disrespected, not being in the playoff. I'm telling you right now, people, listen to me.
Lay the points.
Listen to me right now. If you've ever listened to me for one thing, just listen for this. Find your bookie and bet Clemson for everything you own. They will win by 50, and they will destroy NC State to stick it right up the committee's keister. D-Mace dissection today. You going to dissect Derek Mason?
I think,
is that your all-22?
I think he's still in the laboratory.
I think I'm in the laboratory. My computer went bonkers yesterday.
Oh. Yeah.
Dude, all the sponsors are going to be pissed.
Yeah. My lab, man. I mean, I had a little fire in the lab yesterday.
You got a little rust on the scalpel.
Yeah, one of the techs, you know, one of the techs was messing around and spilled something, you know, on the computer while I was in the back working.
He's like that fat guy from Jurassic Park.
Yeah. He just, I don't know what he was trying to do.
He's trying to.
But he ended up, you know, I think he was drinking a Coke and eating
to steal
a honey
that,
bun. You know.
Trying to steal that dino
exactly.
DNA.
And he knocked over his Coke into the machine, man. And I came running out and I'm like, what are you doing?
He's got ink on his face.
Like, yeah, it's just like, though.
Do you realize what you just done?
Tim Brando from Fox Sports.
Alabama's got to win because if they don't win, they can't get in. Really? No, that's such a joke. No, Alabama is a brand name. Alabama looks good in warm-ups. Alabama's got all these championships. If Alabama loses to LSU in a close game, don't tell me they can't get in the college football playoff.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, please. Alabama, if you're going to say Ohio State is number one because of an eye test, then how the hell is Alabama suddenly out if they lose to LSU? I don't buy that. I just don't. This thing is going to come back down to the teams that we can always predict are going to be here. As long as we're at four teams, this is what we're looking at. Brands matter.
We welcome in the head coach of Vanderbilt, Coach Derek Mason.
I believe Dan Mullen is one of the best play callers, you know, in college football right now, just because, I mean, he finds ways to get matchups. And, you know, that's what's going to be critical in this game, you know, watching Trask stand in the pocket. How are they going to formation you? How are they going to get you in on balance? And they're looking for the one-on-one matchups.
Is there anybody on the show that does not have a tattoo?
Yeah, I think we're all tatted up.
Everybody's got ink.
We all went to prison.
I got two sleeves, man. I got a sleeve.
How many? 6 to 10, we're real and authentic.
All right, how many tattoos does Chase McCabe have?
Zero.
How many tattoos does Willie Donick have?
Zero.
Zero.
How many tattoos does Darren McFarlane have?
I would say Darren has one.
I can see Darren having that one.
I think Darren has one, like a teddy bear.
That one drunken night in college in Kentucky.
You see, like, Darren have, like, an AC/DC tattoo?
It says Kentucky, but it's spelled wrong.
Instead of BBN, it's something else.
All right, so Stillman clearly has no ink.
Hey! He wakes up one morning after a long night in college in Lexington, Kentucky. He's like, guys, it's Big Blue Nation. BBN, Big Blue Nation.
No, yeah. My jungle love. Then you know who this is?
This feels like a Detroit Rock City party of, like, 1992.
Is? It's not Whitney.
1988.
No. Man, it's the time, man.
Morris Day in the
Morris
time.
Day.
Oh, yeah.
Jungle love. Oh, we are, we are.
You would be, like, blaring this out of the house, and Mr. Bruno would come out and start yelling, Mason, turn that down.
Turn that damn radio down.
What was Mr. Bruno down, boy? Mr. Bruno, in my head, has a rocking chair on his front porch, and he listens to the blues. Old Chicago blues, and he just sits up there, and he just yells at people.
See, I picture Mr. Bruno more like Mr. Wilson from Dennis the Menace. Like, you were Dennis the Menace, so we'll call you Derek the Menace. And Mr. Bruno's Mr. Wilson from the old TV show.
D-Menace.
Mr. Wilson!
Yeah.
Yeah, but he would blow his stack all the time.
That's
right?
My kind of guy.
See, and
Sometimes the stack needs to be blown.
I can see Mr. Bruno just be like, hey, boy, get off the lawn. Stop walking through my flower bushes.
Well, he always talks about, like, come look at this. Come look at this. Somebody come look at this here.
Did he have a rocking chair?
I like Mr. Bruno. No, he had two chairs. Him and his wife would sit on the chair.
Everybody. They'd sit in the front porch.
Wave at everybody. He had the best lawn in the neighborhood.
Sweet home Chicago.
I love Mr. Bruno.
When I get to Mr. Bruno's age, the last thing I'll be doing is sitting in a chair next to my wife. I'll be checked out at that point. That's the last thing Nick Cale will be doing. But I digress.
Will you still have Tito's?
Oh, you damn right.
Wait, does that just put you on the back porch and her on the front porch?
Hopefully in separate time zones.
Oh, my God.
Much less porches. There you have it, boys and girls. 4 hours of unscripted entertainment.
I feel like Marquise is throwing you under the bus there a little bit at the end.
That's all right.
But he does it every show.
I know. I couldn't get away with anything he says.
No.
I know that.
A lot of marital equity build up.
Yeah, that's true.
You build up a lot of goodwill, then you can take some shots.
How many years you got?
11? It was 11 last week.
I feel like Nick's wife does the exact same thing he does on the show to her coworkers.
Oh, yeah.
At work.
Of course.
Yeah, so my fat husband.
Yeah.
With his moves. Husband, his moves.
Swim trunks.
And his swim trunks and his white undershirt.
His moves.
And his stinking Tito's.
All he's doing is... We've got a second fridge for just cranberry juice.
All he does is drink and gamble. What a loser. All right,
What else do you do?
I play golf when the weather's nice.
That's true.
Man, I like the golf. That's all I need to do in his life.
Yeah.
Golf, drinking, gamble.
Life.
Yeah, got a couple of pars. Got a couple of Tito's.
You already got a couple healthy kids. A
couple of parlays. Yeah. God bless them. All right, that's it for us. We are done on a Wednesday. Back tomorrow, Predators game day. A big one tomorrow in Colorado. Preds in the Avalanche. Could be a Central Division showdown. Just saying. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. Take care.
Family DJ Nashville, I love ya.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.